From HerbMentor.com, this is Herb Mentor Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Herb Mentor Radio. This is John Gallagher from Herb Mentor and LearningHerbs.com, and today my guest is James Youngworth from Nature Spirit Herbs in Williams, Oregon. I met James last year at the Northwest Herb Fest, and did this great interview with him, but then the file got corrupted, so maybe I should just go back to using audio tape. But the good news is that James agreed to be interviewed again. James and his wife, Kari, are wildcrafters, herbalists, and when you go to naturespiritherbs.com, you see a very simple, elegant site. Just download their catalogs to see an impressive list of their wildcrafted herbs and their remedies. Though I want to ask James a question or two about wildcrafting, I was really interested in what James had to say about sea vegetables. Some folks call them seaweeds, but correct term would be sea vegetables. And his table at the festival was just lined with these beautiful dried sea vegetables that were all harvested by himself. And James, I guess your wife too does that with you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and probably apprentices and whatnot. And it was really amazing to see just that loving care put into the work. So if anyone's ever ordered sea vegetables from Mountain Rose Herbs, you might have very well ordered James and Kari's work there. So how's it going, James?
Good, thanks.
Great. And to many of our listeners here, well, they don't really live by the ocean, but I do want to ask some harvesting questions. But just to start off with, why would someone want to incorporate sea vegetables into their lives?
Well, I mean, that's a difficult one to answer in a reasonable amount of time. But, you know, to try to, make it short or whatever, first of all...
Hey, we've got nothing but time here. We don't have any commercial breaks.
Okay. Well, sea vegetables are like as far as a source of vitamins, of minerals, are one of the most, I would say without a doubt, are the most, concentrated source of minerals and trace minerals of anything we have, any natural thing we have to eat on this planet. Pretty much every element that exists is found in them, every natural element, that is. And so, all of our minerals and trace minerals, basically our blood is like we have an internal ocean. We keep all of our cells bathed in a mixture of minerals that's somewhat similar to seawater. And the easiest way to replenish our inner ocean is by eating seaweed, basically. It's got pretty good ratio of elements, in relation to what our blood is. And, some of the most important, minerals, in the macro minerals would be like potassium, calcium, magnesium, sodium, that are often very useful in treating a number of different or preventing a number of different nervous system conditions. A lot of people, notice improvements with, things like muscle spasms or blood sugar, hyperactivity or, ADD, depression, insomnia. Often they're related to mineral deficiencies. And so if they are, then seaweed will often help with things like that. All these minerals are really alkalizing in the body and help your body conserve calcium in your bones and tissues. So it would also be a way of keeping your bone density up, of just by maintaining a constant abundance of minerals in your blood, alkalizing minerals. The seaweeds. Especially the brown seaweeds are all really high in iodine, And iodine is a essential to thyroid function, healthy and as well as healthy salivary glands and breast tissue and ovaries and testes. It's a, those are the places where your body concentrates iodine and uses it. And seaweeds have been used for thousands of years for preventing thyroid problems and in treating thyroid problems like low thyroid, goiter, with the slow metabolism and all that kind of stuff. All over the world, people have been using seaweeds for maintaining or their, whether they understood it or not, their iodine levels in their bodies and preventing thyroid disease that way. I could go on and on about the thyroid component, but I'm just kind of giving an outline here,
Right. So what do you mean? Which do you mean by brown? Which would be examples of brown seaweeds or sea vegetables or?
Yeah, well, of the ones
that sea vegetables, Matt?
of the ones that we sell, ones like kombu, wakame, bull kelp or kelp fronds, sea palm, bladderwrack. Those are all brown seaweeds. Most of the seaweeds in the market are brown seaweeds. And then there's red seaweeds, which would be ones like dulse, nori, and then the different what we call red marine algae, which are red seaweeds like gigertina and other or grapestone, also known as gigertina, are all red seaweeds or red marine algae. And they've got a little different nutritional and therapeutic profile.
Mm-hmm.
There are two different classes or phyla or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So if some of the benefits that health benefits we're talking about, would we get some of those in the red seaweeds like the nori or the dulse too? Because I know a lot of people know about nori from sushi or something, right?
Right. And there's also the green seaweeds. There's like red marine algae, which is rhodophyta, brown marine algae, which is phaeophyta, and the green marine algae, which is chlorophyta.
Mm-hmm.
Sea lettuce is the only widely used green seaweed. That's got a whole other nutritional profile. I don't harvest any green seaweeds. We have sea lettuce out on our coast, but it just doesn't keep very well. It turns bitter after some months in storage. So.
Oh, I see. Yeah, something you might want. All right.
But anyway, so the brown seaweeds are, probably the highest in minerals, and they've got, different kinds of gels or polysaccharides.
Mm-hmm.
Than the reds do, and so they have different strengths and weaknesses as far as minerals and so on. Like the reds tend to have more iron and less potassium, like that.
What's one brown seaweed that that if someone was just going to take one or two kinds or something, because they want to incorporate it in their diet to keep
right.
it simple. What would you recommend, kelp or something like that? Or
well, if a person was going to be eating, if they want a snackable brown seaweed,
mm-hmm.
then there's ones like kelp fronds or sea palm,
mm-hmm.
That you can just snack on as a easy way to get them into your diet every day.
And my kids love it. We'll keep a little bit out there, and they'll go by, and they'll just eat the kelp,
Kids love dried seaweed. They're often ambivalent about cooked seaweed, but they almost universally love to nibble on dried seaweed. For cooking, probably wakame is probably the wakame or kombu would be the two main ones for cooking with.
Okay. Great.
And, you know, in general, I would just encourage people to eat the kinds of seaweed they like to eat. You know, ideally get some brown and some red seaweed so you get a variety. But just to eat the kinds you like to eat because they're all so, you know, so nutritional. You know.
Now that leads me to what I'd like to explore next, which is, okay, people know that here we've mentioned some health benefits. You know, it's like, yeah, this is obviously something that's going to be really nourishing for us. And
I was just getting started on the health benefits.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah, go ahead, get going. Don't let me stop you. Go ahead.
Okay, well, the seaweeds are also, you know, have a lot of antioxidants and lignans. Everybody knows about antioxidants, lignans. Well, they help to lower estrogen levels when they're high in women, you know, among other things. All kinds of glycanutrients, which I'm not going to go in and on and on about that. And all the known vitamins, including B12, in significant amounts. We have the minerals, which is the main thing, and then secondarily, all these seaweeds, like I was saying, they contain large percentages of these sulfated polysaccharides, which have they're responsible for a large amount of the seaweeds, you know, the minerals, and then the polysaccharides are the other major health component or what's responsible for a lot of the broad spectrum health benefits of using seaweed. And these polysaccharides are like elgin, fucoidin, and laminarin, which are in the brown seaweeds. And then in the reds, we have different kinds of carrageenans, agar, and porphyrin. And so these gels have got all kinds of really special qualities. The elgin and the brown seaweeds help take heavy metals out of your body. This has been well researched that using them regularly will, you know, increase your rate of excretion of heavy metals from your body and lower blood levels of heavy metals. And as well as radioactive elements, which are essentially also heavy metals. And, as I probably explained in that last interview, we all have been exposed to massive amounts of lead from the lead and leaded gasoline for all those 80 years when we put hundreds of millions of tons of lead into our atmosphere and soil from leaded gasoline. And, you know, the average person's got 1,000 times as much lead in their bones as we did 100 years ago. And then mercury from, you know, seafood and dental fillings, things like that. We're all being continually dusted with radioactive iodine, which is I-131, from all the nuclear weapons facilities, weapons production facilities, and as well from all nuclear power plants are regularly releasing plumes of radioactive I-131 gas, which then, you know, settles down to the ground and dust and water and enters the food chain, gets absorbed into people's bodies, and gets concentrated in their thyroid gland, and then it breaks down, and it has a relatively short half-life, and it breaks down pretty quickly, and it starts irradiating the thyroid gland, which is probably the main cause of autoimmune thyroid disease in the world today. The other places where it gets concentrated in the body would be in the areola, the nipple area of the women's breast, where it also breaks down and irradiates those tissues. And in the, like I said, in the salivary glands and in the ovaries and testicles. And so I personally believe that that's one of the major causes of these cancers in these areas in the world today. And so anyway, making sure that you, first of all, making sure that you have adequate iodine in your diet will help you prevent you from absorbing the radioactive iodine. And then the algae and the brown seaweeds also helps take, other heavy metals and other radioactive elements out of your body. We're talking about, different aspects of cancer prevention, in that way. Mineral deficiencies and heavy metal toxicities and radioactive iodine are major factors in cancer risk. So, back to these gels, they help remove heavy metals and radioactive elements from our bodies. The fucoidin in the brown seaweeds and the carrageenans in the red seaweeds have really strong antiviral properties. A lot of these therapeutic polysaccharides in the like algin, and fucoidin inhibit cancers and metastases in cancers that are already formed. Help prevent strokes. They have blood thinning properties. Reduce chronic inflammation. In regular use of especially of the brown seaweeds is it helps reduce chronic inflammation, and that's a broad spectrum effect. We're not just talking arthritis.
Yeah, or even like heart disease or something.
Well, that's what I was saying. It's chronic inflammation is they're starting to realize that it's like one of the major factors in heart disease.
Right.
And so chronic low-grade inflammation, in broad spectrum, what do you want to say, anti-inflammatory effect, reduction of things like high blood pressure, not only the potassium, but things like would be the laminarin and fucoidin. They tend to lower blood pressure, thin the blood a little bit, tend to lower low density cholesterol levels, improve cholesterol profile in people's blood.
Seems just like the cure all to me.
Prevention and even reversal of arterial sclerosis. These are researched, aspects of seaweed health benefits.
Wow.
I don't know about cure all, but something that can help prevent chronic disease across a broad spectrum of, areas, you might say.
Part of a overall, natural health routine. If you're doing all the other good things and adding this is huge, that's the thing, James. This is really try to help people with is what you're saying here is really important, and then it's how does somebody simply incorporate? So if I want to go, wow, this is great, I want to start incorporating these brown seaweeds, start with some brown seaweeds into my diet. What's enough? And what form, how often to use, is it
sure.
Someone buys some and they feel good that they bought it, but yet it sits on the shelf and it never ends in the rice dishes or, can people do to make sure that they get a, enough in what amount, you know? Because we do on this site, just so you know, really stress. I mean, this isn't just a generic type of, like, our focus on what we do on Herb Mentor is really herbs and nourishment, basic first aid, that kind of thing. And also we're really stressing all the time as food is medicine, you know, and encouraging people to do the nourishing infusions, cook with burdock and dandelion, and, you know, throw some astragalus in the pot when you're, you know, during the cold flu season, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, that's where we're, just so you know, we're, like, who we all are here. So,
well, we're definitely
in mind, what kinds of
we're on the same page, you know. I mean, it's like, do it mostly with your food and lifestyle, you know. I mean, like, good water and good food and, you know, and avoiding stress and getting lots of sleep and all those basic things are those are the bottom line. You know, if you can't get that together, forget the herbs.
That's what I say. Yeah, exactly. Right on.
Yeah, the herbs are just extra, you know.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's exactly it. Yeah, all right. I'm starting to get verification in what I'm doing here. It's great. See everyone. It's not just me.
So, yeah, I mean, as far as putting seaweed into your diet, well, you know, the two easiest ways to start with that is to use the snackable ones, which most people can make friends with pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kelp fronds and the sea palm, you know, some people like to snack on nori. They're like salty snackable seaweeds, you know, like kind of like eating chips or jerky or something like that, you know. So that's an easy way. And, you know, as far as kids goes, they don't usually need any encouragement to eat those. You know, they just go for it. Usually, like, kids just go for it.
But for us, you know, I have a little bowl of kelp fronds out. And, you know, say I'm saying to myself, someone says to themselves, well, that's really salty. And, well, it's not preferred, but I'm going to do this. But it tastes fine. I can do it. But, like, how much should they make sure they have in a day?
Yeah, well, in general, you know, 3 to 5 grams a day is a good average amount for, you know, ongoing dietary, nutritional, therapeutic purposes. That's probably about, you know, I mean, if you use the Japanese diet as a example, you know, the Japanese have got, you know, one of the longest lifespans, and, you know, they have very, very little thyroid disease or breast cancer or prostate cancer. There's probably, you know, there's good reason to believe that their consumption of seaweed, they have the highest consumption of seaweed per person in the world, too. And it has something to do with that. And, you know, that's somewhere along the average dietary intake of the Japanese, as I understand, 3 to 5 grams a day. Or, you know, that's about an ounce a week.
So this seems like an herb that you could almost actually beneficially use as a capsule.
That's the other. I mean, you know, we have a. You can also get like a.
I'm not a capsule person, really. I've really never used them, and I don't encourage them. But it seems like this is one actually that might be one that actually would work. You know, people buy like nettle capsules, and it's like,
sure.
What's this for?
Well,
a little bit of nettle dust. It's like,
yeah, well, I mean, it's better than nettle tincture. You know, that's like that's like carrot tincture or something. You know, it's like,
yeah.
But you know, with seaweeds, we're definitely, you know, another easy way to use them is to get a good quality seaweed powder. You know, a lot of the commercial kelp powders taste kind of fishy, but, like, you know, for example, we got a mixture of kombu and wakame that's got a nice taste, and you can just kind of sprinkle it on your food. You know, that's another easy way to make sure you're getting it regularly. But no, you can also get capsules. Like, we have capsules, like a mixture of 6 different seaweeds in a capsule, and we have just a straight kombu. You know, bladderwrack, you know, and a red marine algae in a capsule. But, like,
okay.
You know, the for a general purpose, like a sea vegetable blend or kombu, is good. And I
mention that because folks that are out there learning this stuff, sometimes it's just a bit of a journey from hopping from what they're used to in capsules or tinctures over to putting things in their food.
If you're earlier
in that progression, it might be useful to use a capsule.
Well, to start off with, that's a good way to make sure you're getting, how would I put it? The capsules, they cost more for what you're getting, but you can make sure that you get some with every meal every day. You're kind of making better use of that small amount.
Exactly.
So the capsules are also really good for traveling and things like that,
Of course.
And the convenience and there again, some people just never making friends with the flavor of seaweeds,
Right.
So
it means some of them might be too salty. Like some people love salt, but me, I'm not like I never put salt on my food. I put seaweed on my food. We have a recipe on our mentor. Y'all can find it. It's a Gamaccio kind of a.
Oh yeah.
I put that on everything, which to me, which is much better than salt, and it's salty, but it's not to me salty. Salt itself sometimes is too strong.
Sure. Well, the brown seaweeds and seaweeds in general, but the brown seaweeds in particular got like 4 or 5 times as much potassium salt as sodium salt.
Wow.
And so that's a pretty near to what's your ratio of potassium to sodium in your body. So, when you first start eating something like kelp fronds, you think, oh my gosh, that's so salty. The thing to remember is that it's mostly potassium salt, and if I remember correctly, potassium salt tastes like 8 times as salty as sodium salt.
Right.
So it tastes like, wow, that's like really salty, but you find out after getting to know it better that you can eat a whole handful of it and not get salted out. It's mostly potassium salt. And again,
it seems like some of the red seaweeds, like the dulse and the nori, are maybe more desirable to throw in rice dishes and things. I mean, I'm looking at these ones that you separated out, and I'm looking at like, wow, I've used dulse and nori that I've harvested.
Yeah.
And they throw it in the rice dishes, and it's really nice. But the brown ones I seem to just use, and more in teas or to just take.
Okay. Well, as far as putting in with your rice, our favorite one is wakame.
Oh, okay.
It cooks tender in about the same amount of time. You just toss it in there right with the rice. And it kind of tastes, it cooks into a consistency of a vegetable of its own, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
And then the broth that cooks out of it kind of flavors up the rice kind of nice.
Nice. So you probably have I can imagine your kitchen. You must have some bunch of glass jars with all kinds of different sea vegetables in them. I kind of encourage people to cook. Is just like, keep all your herbs, keep all your nourishing herbs in your kitchen in big glass jars by the stove, and just throw a handful of this and that in it every meal. You'll get it all in there.
And then ones like. Like wakame or sea palm, you can just toss them in with any kind of steamed vegetables. Mm-hmm. But you toss them in, if you're using a steamer, then you throw them in into the water underneath the steamer.
Oh.
So then they'll hydrate and cook in there. And, of course, I don't cook them with potatoes that way because I throw the water off of the potatoes because it's got solanine in it, right?
Right.
But like for most other vegetables, the water that you cook them in is really nutritional and good. Well, the same way, anything you cook seaweed in, any water you cook it in, it's really good broth to drink too. A lot of the goodies go into the broth.
Right. That's
so.
Exactly. So that's why it's a good point. And it's like when people say to me too, like, I don't use herbs. I don't believe in herbs or something. It's like, you don't believe in soup broth?
Well, if someone tells me they don't believe in herbs, I ever say, you ever drink a cup of coffee? Just tell me that doesn't work.
Does that work? That's an even better response. I know, exactly. That's great, because, you know, I love that this is something that's so incredibly nutritious and something that, you know, whole nother level of something that you can simply use and throw in and just eat, you know. We often will, when we make, like, an infusion in the morning of, like, you know, nettles or oat straw or something, sometimes I'll throw a few pieces of kelp in there. Is that doing something, just a few pieces of kelp? Is that enough?
A lot of goodies come out. A lot of the, you know, the gels and minerals cook out of it. You know, the longer the better, really, if you're going to make a decoction, you know.
Well, not even really a decoction. It's more just like, you know, I've heated my water up. I throw my nettle in the jar, an ounce of it, you know, and I fill it up with hot water, and I just let it brew for 4 hours.
Yeah.
It's more just like brewing, not so much decocting. So.
Well, that's a decoction. Just a pretty,
in a way, it is.
Yeah. But anyway.
That is helpful.
A lot of the good stuff comes out, sure.
Okay, good, good. I just was wondering, like, what you thought about that, because that's just a little side note for myself, yeah, because I always, like, do that. Sometimes that's the way I kind of will get my seaweed, because I'll forget to, you know, chew on a piece of kelp frond, and it doesn't always get in the food. So I try to build it into something I'm doing already.
Sure, yeah.
You know, so that's great. If obviously we know from listening here that if we want some amazing quality sea vegetables, we can go to naturespiritsherbs.com. And I guess my next question is just around, well, I'll throw in a couple of thoughts here and you can kind of weave them together, is that what do we need to look out for when buying, buying seaweeds, and you know, you can find them, of course, in Asian groceries, and they're probably dirt cheap. You know, it's kind of like when I go get astragalus, I can get a whole huge brick of it at a Chinese herbal place for like next to nothing. But I don't know where the heck it's coming from.
Right.
Versus buying it organic somewhere that I feel better about. So it's around that. It's about what's safe.
Sure.
You know, of course, we can go to your site, which we all recommend here. But also, what else should people, you know?
Right. Well, if you're going to go for Asian sea vegetables, I would probably recommend going with sea vegetables that come from the island of Hokkaido on the northern end of Japan, which is, you know, well away from, you know, any major industrial areas. You know, a lot of Asian seaweeds aren't that clean. And, you know, I would think that if you're going to go for Japanese seaweed, which, you know, they produce a large percentage of the world's seaweed market, you know, that I would stick with ones from Hokkaido.
How do you know?
Oh, well, they'll say so.
Oh.
You know, because they're from there, they'll advertise it because it's a good selling point.
Oh, so like if going into an Asian grocery, I don't know if anybody doesn't have these around them, but I live in an area where there's quite a few Asian groceries, either in Seattle or even on the east side. I can go into like Wajimaya, which is a Japanese grocery, and so that's what I would look for.
You know, like some kinds of nori are grown on nylon nets, you might say, that are stretched across bays all over Japan and probably Asia in general. I'm told that they sometimes spread chemical fertilizer, you know, across the water to encourage growth and so on. So they're not all, you know, organic and if they're grown anywhere near any major industrial areas, they're likely to be contaminated with heavy metals. And that's the main issue with seaweeds is heavy metal. They will concentrate heavy metals if there's a local source.
But even like where you're gathering or I'm gathering up near, way up in the, say I go up in the San Juan Islands and I'm up there and I gather some around there, and that's where we usually go maybe once in a year in the summer or or near you. Is it a concern, the heavy metals, even like when we're just going out and wildcrafting?
The thing to look out for is, like I said, you know, industrial sources of pollution. Manufacturing, you know, paper mills, you know, whoever's, you know, any kind of heavy manufacturing, there's often heavy metal pollution. Mining. Mining often causes some heavy metal pollution. So you got to look out as sources that are right at the ocean or sources that are on the river or, you know, creek or whatever that's coming down into the ocean near where you're harvesting. So basically it's just to kind of get to know your place,
right?
You know, get to find out what's going on in the area you're harvesting.
So if you're someone just buying it, you probably want to look for someone like yourself who's really paying attention to those things.
Right. Well, there's about half a dozen harvesters on the West Coast, and they're all pretty, you know, or I should say we're all pretty conscious that way, you know.
Right.
There's some harvesters on the East Coast, and at least the smaller time ones over there, I think they're pretty, you know, they're pretty conscientious as well.
And they're probably going to be up in New England and stuff, I imagine.
Maine, mostly.
Yeah.
If I was going to get some from the East Coast, I'd be going for Canadian or seaweed from Canada or Maine.
Right.
Just because further south, you have so much industry.
Right. I mean, that's a huge amount. So not New Jersey.
Not New Jersey.
This is fresh New Jersey seaweed. This is Newark. Newark seaweed.
Let's see, what else would there be to look out for? That's pretty much it. They don't really concentrate much other, you know, they don't concentrate pesticides or things like that. It's mostly heavy metal contamination to look out for.
It is easy. You don't need a lot, and it's easy to locate, you know, because anyone listening to this, I've told you where you can go and get it if you're not, at Nature Spirit Herbs. Let's say someone lives on up in Maine, or they live on Northern California all the way up to Washington, they want to take a trip out, and this sounds like a fun thing to explore, because, you know, I took a sea vegetable class at Earthwalk Northwest, and you can check that out at earthwalknorthwest.com.
Who conducted it?
That's Karen Sherwood.
Uh-huh.
And she's a, her thing is she is real, she's a wild foods person.
She's
a wild foods, you know, gourmet person who can do, you know, she taught at the Tom Brown's Tracker School for...
Oh, okay.
Like maybe 15 years, and then has had her school with her husband Frank here in Issaquah, Washington, for quite a while. And she grew up going summers out in the San Juans, and had a family house which she kind of took on and inherited, and her kids go out to. And she runs she'll take a class up to her family house for a week, and they'll do all kinds of foraging and harvesting and make. Kelp, you collect kelp, but also make like pickles out of whips and all that kind of stuff, fun stuff. That's one option. But do you run classes or, you know, as well?
I have. I mean, I I'm a instructor for the Herb Farm Apprentice Program. They're interns. I take them out on plant walks and teach them about seaweeds and. You know, some constitutional physiology classes, but I haven't done any seaweed classes for the general public in some years now. I don't have anything going right now, anyhow.
Does Ryan Drum do classes for folks regularly?
He does, and that's all up there in Washington.
Right, that's not too far from actually where I go.
Right,
just on a more remote island. On Waldron, right, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's still up there doing that.
He's still doing that. I mean, I heard about, you know, him doing a, you know, geez, when was that? Last summer and fall, he was doing some classes. I know that.
What really struck me in learning this is that there was only, like, apparently, like, one poisonous one. Like, all of them were safe to eat except for this one, yet you wouldn't want to eat some of them because you wouldn't like the texture. But there was one that was just obviously poisonous, right?
Right. Well, you know, in the temperate north here, there's basically no toxic seaweeds. Right. There's some that'll cause digestive upset. You know, some that might make you throw up or get diarrhea. Mm. But that's about it. And those ones all taste bad.
Yeah.
So you can safely go out there and start nibbling on all the seaweeds. And if they're tender enough to nibble on, and if you chew them up, you know, chew a mouthful for 5 or 10 minutes, and if there's no bad taste, then it's good.
That's good. Yeah, I was just amazed on how simple it was to learn. I didn't even need to take, like, a notebook out. It was just kind of like they're so distinct in look and everything, like the bullwhip kelp. I mean, gosh, if you just stuck with bullwhip kelp, you can get, like, 3 plants in and have enough for quite a while, you know. I mean, it's it was something like I think Karen told us it, like, grew, like, something like, it could grow like 20. Is it like one of the fastest growing plants on Earth? It could grow like 20 feet in a day. Is that?
Well, that's the giant kelp.
The giant kelp.
You know, that bull kelp. I mean, they can be 50 or 80 feet long, the whole plant, and they're an annual plant. You know, they start right from the, you know, the microscopic little filament in the springtime. Wow. You know.
And they grow all the way out. It's incredible. Oh, and you just got to just swim on. So that's a pretty easy one, people. If you're ever out somewhere, you know, it's a clean source, and you're out there, and you're in a little bay or something where you see bullwhip kelp watching up on the beach, just look out a bit and see some fresh ones in the water, and just swim out and grab them and take them in. You
right.
know, take one in anyway to experiment with, as long as you have a place to dry it, right? If it's sunny out. But what's the best time of year to harvest?
Well, most of these seaweeds start growing in the early spring, and you know, they kind of go dormant one way or another for the winter. They overwinter as a crust on a rock or as a microscopic thing, or they'll just kind of hang out throughout the winter as a stem attached to a rock, and then in the spring, you know, typically sometime in March or April, they start kind of taking off when the light levels grow, when the days start getting longer, and then in the spring, the upwelling starts happening, which brings colder, deeper mineral-rich water ashore, and then that's when they start growing, and sometime in May or June, they're getting to be pretty good size and ready to harvest, and they hold their quality. You know, they're kind of growing really fast during like May, June, and July, and then they start slowing down, you know. But they're still holding their quality pretty good through August. But by the end of August, the light levels have gone down, and they're growing slower, and the wave action is starting to wear them off faster than they're growing at that point. So sometime, you know, you can, if you just want to go out and get some, anytime from May through September, really.
So I always kind of like notice that if I going in July or so, that they're starting to, like, the texture on some of them, it looks like they're waning, yet at the same time, it's like if I'm going up to the San Juans and harvesting, it's like I need to make sure that it's sunny so it could dry at least somewhat before I could take it home. Otherwise, I'll come home with a big bucket of, you know.
Right. It's like fresh fish. You don't just leave it sitting around.
No, you have to get right to it. And so, like, luckily I have friends where I can go to their place and string out a line or use their fence, you know, and string them out and get them to a point where I could take them home to the dehydrator, you know, but, you know, at least dry 80% of the way.
Sure, and for outdoor drying, you know, which is, you know, the easiest way to get any amount of it dried, May through September is about your, you know, those are the dry months anyway.
And tide levels, I've noticed, make a difference. I went out 1 year at the class. See, when she's doing her class, obviously she knows she's paying attention to the tide because she needs to show. But I didn't know that. And 1 year I go, and I'm just like, wow, all I could get is bull kelp. And I'm like, where's all that nori that we were, you know, is it Porphyra?
Porphyra.
Porphyra. And I realized, I got to go when it's, like, I got to look at the tide charts, which is going to reveal different levels of where they're hanging out, right?
Sure.
Yeah,
the tide table is the easiest way.
Yeah.
The lowest tides are in, you know, May, June, July. And,
right.
You know, there's another that they get low again around the winter solstice, but then the seaweed's not in very good shape at that point. As a rule, the 3-4 days after the new or full moon is the first day where the low tide is late enough in the morning that it's, you know, a reasonable time to harvest. You know, right at new moon and full moon, the low tide is usually right around 6 a.m., and so by the time it gets light, the tide's starting to come in.
But don't just gather off the beach, right? Get it live plants
while
they're out there.
Well, as a rule, if you find it washed up on the beach, it's because it's been out in the ocean for a while. It's washed off the rocks. It grows on rocks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always attached to rock where it grows. You know, the waves can wash it off, and then it washes up on the beach. First, get to know what the live, healthy seaweed looks like on the rocks. Then, if you see some washing up on the beach, you can look at it, and recognize, well, you know, does this look old and tattered or battered or whatever, or does it look like it just washed off a rock somewhere?
Right, exactly. Okay.
And if it's been washed up into the sand, then there's a whole other issue. Seaweed harvesting is a lot like a picnic at the beach. The whole trick is keeping the sand out of the sea.
And you know what? I should probably mention this too. A trick that I just remembered was that if you do have something to wash off your seaweeds before you take them back, wash it off in salt water, not fresh water, right?
Right. Yeah. As soon as you dip some of these seaweeds, as soon as you put them in fresh water, they start to go. You know, they start to die. But then there's also the simple fact that these seaweeds, you know, they have these gels. They can concentrate minerals out of seawater quite efficiently. But you put them in fresh water, and the minerals start washing out of it really quick.
Right.
So, you know, unless you're trying to reduce the minerals in your seaweed, it's not a good idea.
So if we're out on there, we're not even let's just sit, you know, maybe we're out camping on the islands or somewhere where a beach or whatever, and we see some seaweeds, and you know, we can, of course, even if we're doing some camping on the beach, we could probably harvest some and put it in what we're eating or whatever. And I'm just trying to think, if we're out there, we're not necessarily thoroughly collecting, but there's some, like, topical uses too. Let's say you get hurt or you get a cut or you're out there or something. Is the bladder whack the little poppers? Is that right?
Right. It's got the gel filled bladders.
And is that gel helpful for things if you're out there?
Well, you know that all these seaweeds are full of these gels, these polysaccharides. And those polysaccharides is what makes aloe vera good on burns and skin. And basically, it's the same action. That's what makes that slimy. is polysaccharides, these gels. And the gels are all emollient. They make your skin soft topically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in seaweed, you got all these minerals. So, you know, people use seaweeds for bath therapy and do facials and body wraps and all these things for skin purposes, and for also for anti-inflammatory, you know, if they do seaweed baths. You know, as far as like putting on burns, just to take some powdered seaweed and mix it with a little water, or you can take that's probably the best way to do it. But then you can also take, you could take fresh seaweeds and bind them on. But you got to try to get the gel out of the seaweed one way or another and onto the skin. And that's where bladderwrack is so easy. You can just take a bladder and squeeze out that clear gel. It looks like, you know, it's just like, use it just like aloe vera gel on burns, things like that.
I think I had some sunburn.
And what those things do, and they have action. It's kind of like honey. These gels, is they have they're hygroscopic. They draw water toward them, and so basically, you know, in the case of seaweed, you have not only the gels but all the salts and minerals that pulls water out through your skin. And in the case of a burn, what that means is you're reducing the fluid buildup, the edema.
Ah.
And then you're replacing the stagnant fluids. What you got with a burn is all these stagnant fluids kind of pooling up around the cells, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not being supplied with food and not having their waste taken away. So when you put a gel on there like that, or honey, or aloe vera gel, or seaweed gel, or powdered seaweed, it's pulling fluids out through the skin, helping relieve the edema, and then mineral or, you know, nutrient-rich fluids replace it. So you're keeping all those cells more well-fed and well-taken care of, so the healing process can go faster. But it's a simple, I mean, a lot of it's a simple mechanical action of pulling fluids out.
Is the Lantoin and the Comfrey do the same thing?
Well, that has other properties. That apparently stimulates the cell growth and so on by fooling the body into thinking there's more tissue damage than there actually is.
Oh,
yeah.
I never knew that.
With the seaweeds, there's also the anti-inflammatory effects. You know, of these gels, there's, you know, to some degree, I'm sure, also a nutritional effect. You know, just having, you know, all this nutritional, you know, bringing nutrition topically, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if they still do anymore, but I know that for a long time that kelp was used as a wound packing in hospitals for like bullet wounds and other nasty, nasty wounds. They'd pack like a powdered kelp and, you know, rehydrated powdered kelp into these wounds.
Just take some kelp, put it in some water, and it reconstitutes probably in what, a matter of how long? Fresh water, okay then at that point, right?
Yeah.
If you
know, get a bullet wound, I definitely recommend going to the hospital and not trying.
Yeah. Of course, but I'm just saying, like, for your own wound, we were talking about powdered kelp before, and so I was thinking, like, I would take some, like, a small handful of it and reconstitute it with some water, and then I could use that on a burn or a wound.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Okay. Like, if I collected say if I had a burn on my arm, it was a small, you know, smallish burn or something, and if I collected some kelp and then I have larger pieces, you know? And I reconstitute that, then I would be able to actually just to wrap that whole thing around the burn, wouldn't I, around my arm or something?
You could, but it doesn't necessarily bring the gel into contact with your skin so well.
Mm.
I think you'd be better off with a reconstituted powdered seaweed, or if you put that fresh seaweed in the blender with just a little bit of water.
Okay.
And then apply it.
Okay. Oh, that's great to know.
Or, you know, if you were out in the ocean side, I'd chew a little bit of it up and apply it if it's not something you can squeeze gel out of.
So now anyone who's doing any outdoor activity or hiking or doing a camping trip in an ocean area now knows that you don't need your plantain and your other herbs that you might normally look for in a first aid situation, that you have all around you the sea greens that can help you. That's great.
Yeah, seaweeds are also, the gels from them are used in a lot of high-end cosmetics for skin care, things like that.
And ice cream.
Well, yeah, I mean, the elgin and carrageenan are used industrially for all sorts of, food, making, keeping ice cream from crystallizing, for example.
But I can only imagine where that's coming from.
Or for the head, a better head on beer. Instead of using enough malt, they'll add, carrageenan, I believe, to improve the foam quality on beer, for example.
And that seaweed's probably not coming from the best of sources.
Well, I have no idea about all that.
That's
I don't know where all those are being harvested nowadays, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, most people are getting some form of seaweed in them every day, whether they know it or not, in the form of food additives.
Food additives.
It's probably one of the better food additives we've got.
Right. But that isn't giving them the same nutrition as, incorporating some kelp or wakame or kombu in your diet.
Right.
So that's a whole nother thing, yeah. Another
whole aspect of the seaweeds that I talked about earlier, was also that that I didn't talk about earlier, I should say, was the red seaweeds, like Gigertina and a number of other of these red seaweeds got kinds of carrageenans in them that have distinct antiviral and antiherpetic qualities.
Mm-hmm.
That, people who use them regularly often get less herpes outbreaks, either kind, one or two. Less severe outbreaks, and so on. And so there's a lot of people using them for that purpose as well. And to a lesser degree for other viruses, like colds and flu and things like that. They also tend to inhibit those. But it's most specifically for herpes sufferers.
That's good to know.
Whole other aspect of seaweed therapeutics.
Because of the antiviral properties, right?
Right.
Now, something popped in my mind, too, something I actually did two nights ago, is I woke up in the middle of the night with a sore throat. And in addition to just chomping on a little garlic to get that in my system, go back to bed, I just chewed on a couple of kelp pieces, which was also soothing for the throat.
Oh, all those gels, again.
Yeah, so that's a good, people, what about a bad sore throat? Chew on some kelp.
Sure. Marshmallow tea is good that way, too. It's just soothing mucilage,
exactly.
Polysaccharides.
But me, I sometimes refer to myself as the lazy herbalist. I'm looking for something I can just...
That's right. I don't want to... You want a marshmallow root.
If I'm 3 in the morning, I'm just kidding.
Now, 50 or 100 years ago, when they made marshmallows with marshmallow root, you could have just popped a marshmallow in your mouth, right?
Exactly. I know. Oh, those were the days. So, James... some point, we'll have you back on here to talk about some other things like wildcrafting and whatnot, because you do so much. And I recommend people go to Nature Spirit Herbs and check out the you can learn, everyone, so much by going to a site like James's at Nature Spirit Herbs and downloading his catalogs, and not just for the purpose of looking and shopping, but also, you know, when you look at it, the herbal compound or the salves or the tinctures, look at, now I really recommend people do this anywhere, always look at the what's he putting in those, like if you see a certain salve for a certain reason, you know, what herbs are in there, and what's he choosing, and then it's great then to look those herbs up and just try to match those properties. You know, it's part of the learning process where you can really delve in there. And I love, James, your catalogs, you know, because it's so different when I know that you and Kari are making these remedies, and you're also harvesting the herbs that are going in the remedies, and to just know that you're involved in the process from start to finish is really awesome, very special, and I'm really impressed with your catalog. So let's see, at some point, yeah, we can get back and talk about some of that stuff, which I'd really like to do.
I should also mention that also on our website we have several articles by Dr. Ryan Drum on, you know, seaweeds, therapeutic uses of seaweeds, and in particular, he's probably one of the world's foremost authorities on thyroid function and dysfunction, you know, thyroid disease and health and thyroid health, I should say. We have several of his articles posted on our website, and invaluable information that you can't find in very many places.
And so folks, I'm not posting that on Herb Mentor. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have a link, as you see below this, where you downloaded this file, this MP3, a link to James's site. So then that gets you over there, and you can check out his catalog and you check out these articles. And there's also a great Sea Vegetables for Food and Medicine article by Ryan Drum as well. And so download that, take a look at that. Yeah, I just, it's very inspirational, you know, also for folks to go over there and see a family doing this professionally. And, you know, you at some point you start, how long have you been playing with plants your whole life, or at some point you just...
Well, you know, I mean, I first got interested in plants when I was still in grade school.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of found what I liked to do early on. But we started our business. We moved out to Oregon in 1989. And in 1990, we started our business, Nature Spirit Herbs. It was pretty small business, you know. But over the years, it just kind of you know. At this point now, that's all the work we do is our business. We don't have other jobs or whatever like that, you know.
Right. Well, that's what's happening for me too. I just slowly is turning into find your passion and your niche in this great old herbal. There's such a need. There's so many big companies and so many, you know, once you kind of are in the know of the importance of that kind of more like micro herbalist, if you will. I don't know if I just coined that expression, but it's really important to know, you know, to know, like, because you're from the that your herbs, like that. That, you know, just to know that you're involved in the whole process is huge. If I'm going to purchase or buy wildcrafted herbs, I mean, because it's really, you know, it's just like how all of a sudden organic doesn't mean like what it used to,
right?
You know, and now people are looking for those local sources. So, as if you're listening and you become that local herbalist in your area. And you're the one harvesting the herbs in your area, you're really doing a service to your community, because as time's going on, like, this is really needed to have that person who really understands the plants of your area and knows how to use them in a way that can help people. So it's there's always room for for people to take their passions into the world and make a living out of it, you know. It takes a lot of work, but it's, you know, what doesn't, you know?
That's right.
So if I'm in the air in the summer in Washington, Oregon area, of course I saw your table at the Northwest Herb Fest, which you can find out at Cheryl Tilner does that at herbaltransitions.com, I think is her site. Are there other places you frequent that people can meet you?
Let's see. I'll be doing some kind of classes at the Brighton Bush Herbal Conference this fall.
Yes, I want to go there this year. Yeah.
I don't remember the date offhand.
Right.
But I'll be doing some classes over there.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see.
Well, I'll meet up with you next there then, I think, because I'm going to try to be a participant this year there. I keep missing it, and I really want to go.
It's a really nice place. I don't know if you've ever been up there, but
yeah, I did actually. My wife and I recently had the first time we've ever been away from our kids in 8 years. You know, we had somebody volunteer to watch the kids for the weekend. You know, and we went down there on a getaway, which was great. You know,
good choice.
Early winter. Oh yeah, it's always our first choice. The best place in the world, and as far as the Northwest, anyway. But yeah, any like maybe Oregon Country Fair? Do you do that or any of those kinds of things?
I don't. I'm usually I'm almost always harvesting seaweed that weekend. It seems.
Mm. That's a good answer.
You know, during the month of June, July, and August, I don't get to my tide table is my calendar. You know, so I don't get to do too many other things in that time of year.
Right. So, well, then you can see James at Brighton Bush Herbal. You can just Google Brighton Bush Hot Springs, and they will eventually have their calendar up for 2008, I'm sure, and that's a great herbal conference. And if you get to Northwest Herb Fest, if Cheryl's continuing to do it, then, of course, yeah, there is a great spot.
Probably be there, too, if she does it again.
If she does it again, yeah. I might be at my folks' this visiting the East Coast this summer during that time area, if she does it during the same couple weeks. I might miss it, but I'll be there if I can. And then once again, to just, to finish up here, naturespiritherbs.com is where you want to go and read some great articles and check out James and Kari's harvested goods and amazing formulas and salves and things that they make. Very, very cool stuff. So, James, thanks so much for talking with us and sharing your experiences and knowledge and wisdom. And we really appreciate that. And we'd love to have you on again. And, I look forward to catching up with you again sometime.
Well, thanks for asking me.
Hey, thank you. And like I said, and I'm sure that we'll be have you on again. It was awesome. Thanks a lot.
Herb Mentor Radio on herbmentor.com is a production of learningherbs.com. Visit learningherbs.com for free herbal lessons, including Herb Mentor News, Home Remedy Secrets, and Supermarket Herbalism. You'll also find the Herbal Medicine Making Kit and our board game Wildcraft. Herb Mentor Radio. Copyright learningherbs.com, all rights reserved. Thanks so much for listening.